Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and I am joined with the full crew here for this special playoff edition. QB1, JR, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
It's playoff time, man. I'm fired up. Let's go.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ready to get right to business. Everyone's favorite puppy parent, Miles Gorham, skipping puppy classes to come give us the goods on the Vikings. What's going on, my man?
What's up? It's playoff weekend. Let's go. It's time to get this thing done.
Let's do it. And last but certainly not least, the man who for but a brief spell was the most hated man on all of Vikings Twitter, but he's back. People love him again. We still love him. Saxy Prince, what's going on, my man?
Yeah, man. That's kind of actually pretty true because I had a tweet this earlier this week that's actually been circulating quite a bit. So some people love me again, still saying they don't. But we haven't actually done this segment of the show in a long time. So I have a random question for you guys. Haven't done it in, you know, weeks. But what is y'all's your most memorable playoff, you know, experience or whatnot? I'm not sure if you guys have ever been to a game or, you know, just watching TV, but your most memorable playoff experience. It was my birthday yesterday. 2 years ago to that date, I was actually at the 2015 Vikings playoff game in which Blair Walsh missed that field goal. So
you just said that. Oh, never mind. It don't matter. I was going to talk about the whole ice fishing situation, and you went and sat out on that. But you're right. You're right.
Yeah, man. Well, that's different. That's different because I mean, I can't swim. So I mean, you know, another situation, but like, yeah, it was cold. I kid you guys not, my feet were frozen, or not frozen, but they were swollen for 2 weeks. Like putting on shoes was hard.
That's not for us, Yinka.
Yeah, it's not. It building my DNA.
That was not for you. That you weren't supposed to be out there.
Oh, they didn't even need to. My skin, as soon as they hit it, was just like, Yinka, what are you doing?
Yinka was wearing a sweatshirt and tennis shoes.
Man,
looking like that scene in Coming to America.
What about y'all?
I mean, for me, it's probably the same thing. For I was not out in the cold or anything, but for me, I think that game was probably my most memorable in that it kind of adjusted the way I look at fandom because I was acting so ridiculous and upset after Blair Walsh missed the kick that I caused my children to go into a mild panic because they thought something was wrong with me. And it forced me to put my fandom in perspective and maybe not get so low when things didn't go the way I want them to go. And they'd probably not get as high when things go well either. So yeah, that was a memorable experience because it probably changed the way that I look at things when it comes to football and realize it really is just a game. It's not that big of a deal. So that'd be the same for me. How about you, JR?
I guess I'll go out on a different outlook since I already named probably the top one on everybody's list. How about the 2005 wild card game against the Packers where Randy Moss mooned the crowd? That's like a top memorable moment for me in Vikings playoff history. So
definitely I'll go never with that forget one. That.
I'll never go with that one.
Joe Buck.
Joe Buck.
It's when the hate was born. How about you, Miles?
Oh man, like my first like real memorable moment as a Vikings fan, like was 98. Unfortunately, that's like when the first time I got my heart broken. Besides the girl, two girls in my class, but you know that is what it is.
He said two girls.
And the best part of all this is Miles is recording on the couch next to Mrs. Miles.
Yeah, she knows all this.
You're a brave man. You're a brave man. Good for you, Miles.
But no, 98 has to be like the most the one I know I'll never forget, just because that was like my the first like major moment as a Vikings fan for me. But then obviously like 09 is that one for me because I was in college, and I just remember after the game ended, I just went up to my room and I closed my door and I didn't talk to anybody for like 2 days. And my roommates, of course, just, you know, they gave me hell the whole time. So, yeah.
Well, all right.
And can I just say something about that?
Go ahead.
I know that Vikings Twitter is still upset at Mr. Blair Walsh, but you have to understand that this man atoned for his sins. We need to forgive Blair Walsh and all his transgressions, because he went to the Seahawks and he made life miserable for them. So much that some of the key misses kept them out of the playoffs. He atoned for his sins, and I have forgiven him. I think y'all should too.
That's all right.
I mean, I stopped thinking about Blair Walsh like Arif said, you know, you can't have a kicker living rent-free in your. Well, who's thinking about the kicker? Why are we even Blair
Walsh? Well, I mean, Gary Anderson. But in Gary Anderson's defense, like, Denny Green played the game safe for the whole season. Denny Green didn't play it safe, and that one drive on third and long, instead of going, you know, trying to hit him for a touchdown or something, he went conservative and ran the ball, and went for the field goal.
Yeah.
Just but kind of the same with Teddy, because I mean, Teddy hits two back to back pretty important passes. You should have just kept passing the ball and score. And win the game.
Well, that was a little bit of a different situation.
I mean, on the 27-yard line, there's a 98% chance that kick goes in.
Right. Well, thank God
for that 2%.
Same for Gary Anderson's. It was like a 39-yarder, but. And then the defense doesn't stop the Falcons from scoring, too. So whatever, but.
Atlanta's been paying for that for quite some time, too, though.
I know. I like feel bad for them.
You can't even be mad at Atlanta anymore, because Atlanta sports and Minnesota sports, they're like the same. Right. Atlanta might be in a worse spot right now after Monday. So. But all right, Yanka, thank you for bringing up that question and having us relive all those terrible memories all over again.
I aim to please, man.
Yeah, I know. And you do good work. Thank you, sir. Well, you know, we have this game coming up. It's a big game, and It's a really interesting matchup when you think about things, because you have the Saints, who far and away have had the most efficient offense in the league this year, going up against the Vikings, which easily have, you know, the best defensive unit in the league. And so when you really look at this matchup, and I'm really eager to hear what you guys have to say about it, because when you're looking at things, the Vikings defense is awesome. And as you look at how they've been trending towards the end of the season, they're still playing awesome. Saints offense playing great. And as you get towards the end of the season, still playing great. When you flip that thing around on the other side, though, the Vikings offense full season numbers look amazing. But as we've talked about on this show a couple of times, things have started to slow down a little bit in the passing attack. So Minnesota, whose season-long kind of success rate in the passing attack is number 3 overall, from, you know, week 14 to now, the passing success rate has fallen to 16th. The run game has been pretty average all season. So we were at 15 earlier from a success rate standpoint, sitting at 16 now. I think that's where the matchup is going to go, because for the Saints, their defense that, you know, people have been talking about a lot, and when you look at their season-long numbers, their defense looks okay. Passing success rate is at 12th for the season. But over the last couple weeks, they've fallen down to 22nd in the league. And so, JR, I am very, 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 very curious to get your thoughts on kind of how this matchup is going to go. And based on the way that we attacked the Saints the first time, which was a lot of down-the-field stuff, and when I've looked at a couple things over the course of this week here, it looks like that's really the best place to hit the Saints. If you're going to try to get him, you want to go really deep on Crawley's side of the field. And over the last few weeks, that's really borne itself out as the pass defense has fallen off. What are your thoughts on that matchup? And are you feeling comfortable, confident that, you know, Shurmur will be able to scheme it up and Case Keenum is going to be able to go out and exploit, you know, that vulnerability of the Saints? And then I guess what else are you seeing when you kind of look at things in terms of, you know, the passing offenses and this coaching matchup that we're about to see?
Yeah, so first of all, this is a fascinating, fascinating matchup on both sides of the ball. You got Drew Brees against the Vikings defense, and of course you got Case Keenum against the Saints defense. Completely, completely different teams from week one, and that's the first thing you notice watching them from week one to now. A lot of different personnel on the field. A lot of players got better from then, and a lot of other factors are going into why each team is at this point and at this time. Starting with the Saints defense, obviously, is led by Cam Jordan, good player. Edge rusher Sheldon Rankins on the interior, he's a good player. A little weak in the middle. I think that's where the weakness is of their defense. Manti Te'o, we know he's not the best in coverage. He's more of a run-stopping or run-stuffing linebacker. The secondary is average, led by Marshon Lattimore, who's had a fantastic rookie season. Kenny Vaccaro is out. He did play in the first matchup, and that was one player that they did attack. So it'll be interesting to see how they do adjust with his backup being in and Marcus Williams, who's had a fantastic rookie season as well, just how they will attack that secondary. And I'm interested to see what the Saints' defensive game plan will be this game and how it will be different. What you saw in the week one matchup is surprisingly they played a lot of man-to-man coverage, and I didn't expect them to do that because of how big of threats Thielen and Diggs were and how good of route runners they are and how reliable they are and consistently beating man coverage. So I want to see the changeup that they do make with the secondary and the coverages that they do play. Will they play more zone and, you know, sit back and force Case Keenum to beat them and rely on the pass rush to get to him? Or will they, you know, reiterate the same game plan or have an identical game plan and playing man-to-man with Marshon Lattimore being better and Ken Crawley being a lot better than what people are giving him credit for? Ken Crawley is a pretty decent number two corner alongside Marshon Lattimore. But the counter for the Vikings from that was they ran a lot of crossing routes. And what you saw in the week one matchup is really that's how Diggs and Thielen were getting free. They were running a lot of rub routes, a lot of pick routes from opposite sides of the field. And that's why they were having so much success against this Saints secondary. So what will be interesting to see is how differently the secondary does play or match up against Thielen and Diggs. I don't expect Marshon Lattimore to shadow Thielen, but I think he's going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage against him, whether he's in the slot or if he is outside. When the Vikings running game really has to get going, I think they're going to have to rely on that a lot simply because they have to keep the Saints offense off the field. Yes, I know the Vikings defense is very good. They're very good on third down, but the Saints offense is very explosive. And, I mean, you just have to do whatever you can to keep them off the – you have to do whatever you can to keep them off the field. And the best way to do that is to feed Latavius Murray and to feed Jerick McKinnon just so you can keep Drew Brees off the field. He can't hurt you if he's on the sideline. On the flip side of that, the Vikings defense is going to be interesting to see the adjustments that Mike Zimmer makes now that – Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram are such big threats in the running game. Didn't have a good week last week against the Panthers. I don't even think they ended up with 60 rushing yards total, but they still were able to put up 31 points, which is very impressive. Passing game was really good, and they got into a situation where they were relying strictly on the passing game. They just said, screw it, we're not going to try to run the ball. We're just going to put the ball in Drew Brees' hands, and he is going to lead us to victory, and that's what they did. So, a lot of intriguing matchups in this game, Xavier Rhodes and Michael Thomas. Xavier Rhodes, he didn't necessarily shadow Michael Thomas, but he did predominantly play a lot of man-to-man coverage. He didn't shadow him the entire game looking back on it. I think the biggest key for the Vikings secondary is they have to limit their wide receivers' yards after the catch opportunities, and that's what the Saints – they're a big play offense, so they live off of explosive plays, whether that's the screen game, passing yards down the field, getting into Ted Ginn and Kamara in space. So they're an explosive offense, and they're predicated off that yak yardage, and that's what they've been living and dying by. So there's a lot of intriguing matchups in this game, and I'm just ready to see how it all plays out.
And so and I'm going to put you on the spot here. This wasn't on the show notes or anything like that, but this is a conversation I've seen play out a couple times here on Vikings Twitter. So I'm just curious because, you know, you've been going through and looking at these matchups and looking at the coaching and the potential adjustments they might make. I guess, what are your thoughts on, like, the coaching matchup, Zimmer versus Sean Payton? Who do you give the edge to in that kind of a matchup?
Defense always. Defense wins championships. And we've seen Mike Zimmer shut out pretty much or shut down pretty much every single offensive mind that he's went up against this year. And that includes Sean Payton, Sean McVay, and there's a long list of other guys on that list this season as well. And you guys know I'm a former quarterback. I'm an offensive guy, but I'm a firm believer in that defenses win championships. And we've seen it time in and time out, year in and year out, every single year. And that's why I think the Vikings do have the underlying advantage in this matchup, because I trust Mike Zimmer more than I trust Sean Payton. And I trust the Vikings defense to make a play when it counts more than I do Drew Brees. And we saw even last game against the Panthers, Drew Brees almost gave that game away with that late interception down the stretch. But the Panthers offense wasn't able to capitalize there at the end. But I just trust the Vikings defense to make a play when it counts as opposed to Drew Brees.
Yes, sir. Love it. Love it. And I love the confidence, too. Well, you alluded to it a little bit there. You mentioned a couple of the names. You know, Xavier Rhodes, Michael Thomas, Marshawn Lattimore, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs. So, you know, obviously we're talking wide receivers. We're talking to Miles Gorham. So, Miles, this is really, I mean, these are the sexy matchups. These are the things people have been talking about really all week. These are the matchups that, you know, affect, you know, the degenerates like myself who are doing, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel this weekend here. So, like, what are your thoughts on you know, these awesome matchups that we do have, wide receivers versus DBs on both sides of the ball? And I guess, you know, at the end of it, let us know who you think has the advantage.
Yeah, definitely. I've been going in looking into both sides. I really think if you look at these teams in terms of what their makeup is and what their strengths are and weaknesses are, I think they match up in terms of, like, the Vikings receivers to the Saints receivers. I think there's a lot of comparisons that can be made. You have, you know, your, I'm not even going to, so bear with me. I'll finish and let this, and not just make this seem like a so definitive answer. Like, based off stats alone for this season, you have Michael Thomas and Adam Thielen at the top for each team as, like, the, you know, the prototypical number one receiver in terms of, you look at their receptions and their yards and their touchdowns. And then you look at the number twos with, you know, Ted Ginn for the Saints and Stephon Diggs for the Vikings. And then you go down from there. It's really like that, the top two guys for each team at receiver. And then you sprinkle in, like, the, you know, Kyle Rudolph for the Vikings, but then, you know, the number three receiver for the Saints, well, actually the number two, but in this fact, I'm going to say the number three is Alvin Kamara. So there's kind of that, like, similarities in terms of, you know, yards and, you know, the scoring production and stuff like that. But where I think the advantage really goes to for that is the Vikings, just because I think Adam Thielen and Michael Thomas have a pretty, you know, the way they've played this season have been pretty comparable. They're, you know, guys have had a hard time, you know, jamming them on the line, and their routes have been really crisp and they're getting open and they're making contested catches. But then you go to the number two, this is where I really feel, you know, we have the advantage against the Saints, because you have Stephon Diggs, I'm just going to say it, but versus, you know, Ted Ginn. Ginn does have a little bit more of that, you know, full downfield deep threat ability, but Diggs does too. But Diggs is a more refined overall dynamic playmaker than Ted Ginn is in terms of his route running, his ability to win. So I really think that's where we got to take advantage, especially, you know, we'll see what Marshawn Lattimore does this week in terms of who he matches up against. But that's where I think the matchups, where I think they favor the Vikings, is because if Marshawn Lattimore, if you were to, you know, shadow anybody, that other guy's going to be open, because that Ken Crawley can't check in Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs. So I think that's really where the big key matchups are, because Xavier Rhodes, I think we can almost guarantee Xavier Rhodes is going to shadow Michael Thomas, because they're not as afraid of a guy like Ted Ginn going deep, because this defense is predicating themselves and on making sure that they don't allow those deep plays. I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think they're the best defense in the league of allowing the least amount of 20 plus explosive plays.
And so, Miles, that is correct. I actually do have those numbers in front of me, and they're actually second for explosive passes and first for explosive rushing when we're looking at it in terms of success rate. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's perfect.
Probably first overall. So yeah, that's pretty good.
I knew it was in that range though. And I, So I think, you know, a guy like Trey Waynes, so then you flip that and you go to the defensive side, you know, you have Xavier Rhodes, Marshawn Lattimore. That's a pretty solid matchup, but you know, you give the edge to Xavier Rhodes because he's more, he's got more, you know, under his belt, you know, more experience. I just think he's a better player than Marshawn Lattimore is right now. And then you go to the number two, Ken Crawley versus Trey Waynes. I think Trey Waynes definitely has that edge the way he's played this season, and the way he's played this last half of the season has been really impressive. He matches up really well with a guy like Ted Ginn deep down the field, because Trey Waynes doesn't really get burnt too often anymore the way he used to. He's done a lot better job adjusting the ball. And then you go to the back end where this is the heaviest aspect of a difference between what the Saints have compared to the Vikings. And this isn't a knock on what the Saints have, but we have all pro potential defensive player of the year, you know, candidate Harrison Smith. And then they have Marcus Williams and, you know, what they have, they had Kenny Vaccaro, but he's out. So they have Von Bell, and then we have Anderson Dejo. So there's definitely a big difference in between the defensive backfields in terms of experience and overall play. And I think the Vikings have the advantage in that too, like heavily. Marshawn Lattimore, like I said, is a really good young up and coming player who's locked down guys like Julio Jones at times, but I don't think they have enough to stop what we have. If we can get our, you know, play action pass going and all that. So I really like these matchups for the Vikings, just because then again, like you saw last week for the way the Carolina Panthers played the Saints, the one guy that was consistently getting open against the weak linebackers, I know I'm more DB receiver, but I kind of noticed this too. Greg Olsen was open a lot against the Saints, you know, kind of porous linebacker core. So I think Kyle Rudolph, if he's 100% healthy, which I expect him to be, it sounds like he could really have a really big game this week and could be a really key factor. And then obviously, if the Vikings can find any production from a Jarius Wright, moving the chains, or potentially Laquan Treadwell, Michael Floyd, they could find anything from those guys this week, that'd be, you know, just beneficial. And then you sprinkle in the running back situation with Jerick McKinnon. I would, you know, the way the Saints used Alvin Kamara versus Jerick McKinnon, I would love to see the Vikings kind of utilize Jerick McKinnon in that mold a little bit more than they do. And maybe they will, because we know they've kind of haven't really used Jerick McKinnon all that much the last few weeks to end the season. So hopefully they were saving him for, you know, games like this, against matchups against guys like the linebackers like Manti Te'o and, you know, AJ Klein and those guys. Maybe that's the plan. And if it is, I'm all for it, because I think Jerick McKinnon could eat those guys alive.
Love it, love it, love it. So basically what I heard from you right there is that David Morgan is who I need to put in my DraftKings lineup if I'm trying to win the $1 million. And that's Stephon, the guy. So I'm going to stack some Spark God, Stephon Diggs. And that's what's going to win me the $1 million. Stephon Diggs on Crawley is the matchup that we're really hoping to see.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's the Ken Crawley can't check Stephon Diggs.
No, they don't want it. I'm hoping for another game like we saw in week one from Stephon Diggs. Yep. Well, you know, last, certainly not least, you know, we're moving over to the Sexy Prince here to talk about the part of the game that he loves probably more. Well, no, you know, JR really loves, you know, the trenches, the offensive line stuff as well. But, you know, we decided to give Prince not just the trenches, but also the running backs, who I don't think anyone loves more than Yanka. So Yanka, as we get down into this and we're thinking about, you know, the trenches, where, you know, oftentimes folks will say that's where the game is won and lost. What are your thoughts on these matchups when we look at, you know, the offensive lines, the defensive lines, the linebackers, the running backs? How's this going to shake out? What are your thoughts? And what are you really going to be looking for when the game kicks off on Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting one. Obviously, the Vikings are, you know, with losing, you know, Nick Easton for the rest of the year, they've have had to shuffle, you know, that interior offensive line a little bit. You know, you've been seeing more so on Twitter, Mike Remmers has moved over to left guard, which I think is, you know, kind of a good move for them. I think they kind of understand maybe that Hill and Reeve can handle, you know, both, you know, Sheldon Rankins and Jordan Cameron on their own. They might need to give them some help on either side, you know, from time to time. But I think that they understood that the interior was really where they wanted to focus a lot of their attention to, especially that left guard position. Now, as that pertains to, you know, the Vikings offense, you know, I'm really looking for the Vikings to run, you know, some, you know, tunnel screens against the against their defensive line. In the interior, you know, they're kind of hurting a little bit. Guys are not playing really that well. Tyler Davidson, and as well as David Onyemata, I think is how you say it. Haven't really, according to Pro Football Focus, haven't really been formed really that well over the course of the season. So Jerick McKinnon is going to be really, you know, both Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon. But I, obviously, when you're just looking at pure athleticism, screens are kind of where I want Jet to take over in this game. As well as, you know, the, you know, you get past the trenches, you want Jerick McKinnon to, you know, be able to get behind or even match up against some of the Saints linebackers. You know, Manti Te'o has been playing the best of the three. Actually, no, it's Craig Robinson's playing the best of the three linebackers, but their linebacker core has not really performed really that well. I mean, you know, former Viking Mike Motti really, you know, really hasn't done very much. That's definitely an area where I think the Vikings should attack a little bit more so. When you have, if you are getting Jerick McKinnon, maybe in some swing passes, or, you know, if you do have to do some check downs with Latavius Murray, that's definitely an area of the field that you can attack. So as it pertains to the Vikings offensive line, I think that they, you know, they might struggle on the, you know, on the edges a little bit more, but I think they should be able to, they should be able to win in that interior battle, which is going to be important with getting Pat Elflein back, who has performed very well over the course of this season. You know, flip-flopping it, this is where I think it gets fun. You know, I do feel as if the Vikings, you know, interior is really going to have a lot of fun. You know, you are facing Max Unger, you are facing Larry Warford, and Senio Calamenti, I think is how you say his name, replacing Andres Pete, who I think was starting to settle into his left guard position, but he, you know, with that injury, you know, they have to put in another guy into there. So that's, you know, as far as where want to apply a little bit more pressure, he is going to want to apply pressure to that interior. I think he can win. Where I think the Vikings, you know, could potentially struggle, you know, in the trenches is like the tackle positions. Ryan Ramczyk has actually performed pretty well over the course of the season, as well as Teron Armstead. You know, those might be battles to watch to see who's kind of winning. I don't completely believe that Everson Griffin is 100%. I don't think he's been 100% in a while. So those are definitely matchups to watch, you know, to see if he can win that battle. So, you know, again, if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm definitely attacking. I'm definitely attacking the interior to see if you can win some of those battles. But, you know, if you are seeing, you know, Everson Griffin, maybe even Danielle Hunter struggle a little bit more, something that I did when I went back to the previous game is, you know, you saw Barr used sometimes as that, you know, the very outside of Everson Griffin as a, you know, as a defensive end. So that's just another wrinkle that they can definitely add to just, you know, continue to apply pressure to that outside in case that you will see, you know, Kamara or Ingram get to those outsides. Something that I did notice when I went back and watched is, you know, they do like to use a lot of two running back sets. And as well, they had this actually really unique formation where they had, I think it was like Breeze, maybe in like this pistol or shotgun formation. And you had both running backs on either side of them. And then you had John Kuhn right behind them, you know, in that fullback position. Zach Line, a former Viking. Not that was really interesting, because there's, you know, you can obviously tack them a little bit differently. And I think that's really going to cause the Vikings to play a little bit more discipline and really, you know, protect those edges a little bit more, which, like I said, you know, I don't feel Everson Griffin is 100%. So that's definitely a formation that they can use to attack our edges. I would probably avoid, if I was the Saints, I would probably avoid like a lot of the long developing run plays, just because, I mean, this Vikings defense is very, very fast. I think Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks do a really good job, you know, east to west, as well as, you know, as you've seen Linval Joseph kind of break up, even with the double teams, kind of break into that interior often. So, you know, a lot of good matchups here, as well as, you know, it is going to be, you know, who breaks first, really. And I do think that the Vikings are going to do a really good job on the defensive side of the ball. I think they'll hold their own on the, you know, offensive line, but I do feel like, you know, it will be a matchup to watch.
So from your perspective, kind of, you know, there's a lot of, you got, you gave us a lot of information there, but, you know, sometimes I need things broken down in a way that's even more simple for me here. So who should I be putting in this game? Which player should appear in my DraftKings lineup?
I will give, I think, Riley Reiff the edge.
I can't play a left tackle on DraftKings, man. should I be playing Alvin Kamara? Should I be playing Mark Ingram? Should I be playing Jerick McKinnon? Should I be playing Latavius Murray? Which one of these players is the one that's going to have the game that swings it?
Yeah, I do think I'm going to give the slight edge to the Saints running back core. I do think that Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara are going to have, you know, they're going to have significant, you know, runs. I don't think they're going to be, you know, those huge 20-yard, you know, 30-yard, you know, pops that you'll see. But I do feel like they will be efficient. And that's why I think it's just, like, so important that we, you know, contain those edges so that you aren't getting those, you know, huge, you know, down-the-field plays that you kind of saw in that first matchup.
Okay. All right.
And I was just going through, like, each and every matchup on the offensive line to see if, you know, which one would kind of get the edge there. But
okay, gentlemen, that is a ton of really, 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 really awesome stuff. Thank you very much for that. But I think we're gonna have to put this on pause for just a quick second here, because I think our guest is ready to go. So just listeners, bear with us for just a quick second here. We're gonna go ahead and get our special guest on, and we'll be back in just a second. Well, all right, everyone. We have a special guest joining us tonight on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We have Jeff Duncan joining us to give us some insight from the Saints perspective. I know that, you know, things have gotten a little contentious between, I guess, Vikings Twitter, Saints Twitter, but we have Jeff here to bring us the perspective on things down in the Big Easy. So, Jeff, I guess we'll get you started with an easy kind of softball kind of wind-up question here. I guess tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find your work, and how long you've been covering the team.
Okay, well, I've been down in New Orleans, guys. I like to refer to it as a banana republic down here. If you've ever been to New Orleans, you know it's one of the most unique cities in America, maybe the most unique city in America, and I love it, but I didn't know what I was getting into when I signed on back in 1999 to cover LSU for the Times-Picayune. Immediately moved a year after that to the Saints beat, and really joined the team back then. I say the team, the coverage team, when Jim Haslett and Randy Mueller got hired. And I've been covering them in a different role ever since. I was the beat writer for about 7 or 8 years, and then moved into a columnist row. So now I'm a general sports columnist, to kind of, for your guys up there, kind of like Pat Royce or Jim Suhan, you know, kind of I cover everything. But in New Orleans, the Saints are by far the dominant sports coverage beat for us. About 80% of my work is on the Saints, and I've written 2 books on the Saints, Tales from the Saints Sidelines and From Bags to Riches, which documented their Super Bowl run in 2009. So I like to think that I've seen a lot in my 20 years, but I wasn't around for the early days when they were the Aints and the Bagheads and all that. I missed all that, but in researching and writing my book on the Saints, I certainly became quite familiar with the forlorn history. And I've actually referenced a little of that this week, because one of my best friends at the Times-Picayune is Brett Anderson, who is from Minneapolis, and he's our restaurant critic. And he has educated me over the years of the tortured history of Vikings fans and all the heartbreak that they've suffered. So I think Saints fans and Vikings fans can relate similarly in that regard.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe that can be the starting point, because as things stands right now, there's quite a bit of animosity between the two fan bases. We haven't forgotten 2009. There's still a lot of hard feelings about all of that. I guess we did have a follow-up question for you on that. I guess, how did you kind of get into this? Because as we started to do a little bit of research on you here, you know, you're the columnist, you have a radio show. I guess, what carried you to the career path that you currently find yourself in?
Well, I actually am from Louisville, Kentucky, so that's basketball country, as you guys know. Wasn't really a big NFL follower. I mean, the closest team was the Cincinnati Bengals, and they were pretty awful. So, but I started my journalism career in Monroe, Louisiana. That was back in the days when you had to kind of start at a really small market and work your way up. It was really difficult to get jobs. So I started out in Louisiana and just kind of worked my way around. I worked in at Melbourne and at Florida Today, and I worked at USA Today for a little while in a role, and then went to Nashville and worked there. And that's how I started my NFL career, covering the Titans in Nashville. And then kind of got hooked up back in Louisiana with all my connections. This is always such a great place to work at New Orleans, a great city to live in, lots of stuff to do. You know, we always have Super Bowls here, the Sugar Bowl. We have national championship games. We get Final Fours just like you guys do up in Minneapolis. So it's a great sports market, and always kind of wanted to get back here. And so when I got a chance to cover LSU, really jumped at the chance. And then we just, like you said, my colleague Larry Holder and I have started a radio show down here in the last 6 months, and we're really having fun with that, getting to, you know, kind of cut loose a little bit, have a little more personality in our work than say what we do in the print editions of the Times-Picayune. So really having fun with a lot of that, and it's been well received so far. So fingers crossed that it keeps going and the FCC doesn't raid us anytime soon.
That's awesome, man. Well, I guess we'll get to some of the football stuff here. I guess, what are your general thoughts? And I guess, what are the feelings around, you know, the Saints in New Orleans right now? What are the thoughts on the season to date?
Well, I think people are pretty confident, to be honest with you. I don't think Saints fans, like a lot of fans, are pretty myopic. And the running narrative down here is that, and I'm sure you all have heard it, you've read it, is that this is a different Saints team than the one that the Vikings played in the opener. And I think that's very much true. I think this team is much better. It's found itself. It has an identity. But I try to educate people here. The Vikings are much better too. You know, it wasn't like the Vikings were this perfectly steeled unit in week one, and that's as good as they got. They haven't improved. They're a much better team too, and a more confident team, and they're playing at home. But I do think there's some validity in the fact that, you know, if you remember back then in the opener, the Adrian Peterson kind of experiment was still going on. I think Sean Payton was trying to force feed the ball to him early on in that game. And quickly they realized what they had in Alvin Kamara. And the team is now built around the two running backs, Ingram and Kamara. And the defense at that time was starting three or four rookies, Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Williams, Alex Anzalone was starting. And that unit has really come a long way. They're playing with a lot more confidence. They've lost a lot of players on that side of the ball, but the two alpha dogs on that side, Cameron Jordan, the defensive end, and Marshawn Lattimore, the rookie corner, those guys are healthy, and that's what gives that unit its strength. And so I do think the Saints are playing much better now. I think they're quietly optimistic in this game, but they certainly know what they're getting into. Because we were just up there 4 months ago. We know how hostile that stadium is. But I think everybody's hopes are pinned on Drew Brees and thinking that he can make one last maybe Super Bowl run, and they feel like they have an advantage at the most important position over Case Keenum in this regard.
Jeff, JR here once again. Thanks for coming on. There's a lot of individual intriguing matchups, positional matchups in this game. We talk about Xavier Rhodes versus Michael Thomas, the Saints running backs versus the Vikings linebackers, and Adam Thielen versus Marshawn Lattimore. Which matchup is most intriguing to you and the one that you will be keying in?
Well, and those are all great matchups, and I really think this is a great matchup game. There's so many great players, so many Pro Bowl caliber players, but I really think that if I was going to do – I don't know if I want to break it down in individuals. I really think the key for the Saints is going to be, can they run the football? Can they generate some type of ground game? They didn't do it in the opener, and they've been successful since then. They didn't do it last week against Carolina. They really rode Drew Brees, Mike Thomas in that passing game. But Carolina's back end is not nearly as talented or accomplished as the Vikings. So I think Minnesota's front seven is going to try and handle that running game by itself. The difference for the Saints, and the reason I think the Saints might have some optimism, in addition to the fact that Kamara has kind of emerged as this playmaker in the backfield, people forget that the Saints played that opener without Terron Armstead at left tackle. They had Ryan Ramczyk, a rookie, playing left tackle in his first NFL game. And Zach Strief, their starting right tackle, went down in that game early. I think it was in the second quarter. And they had to play Cineo Calamente at right tackle. Well, this line now is much better. It's much more dominant. It's actually probably the strength of the team. And they're all intact except for Andres Pete. He got hurt last game. He's out. But Cineo Calamente will fill in for him. He's a much better guard than a right tackle. So this line, I think, has a chance to at least establish some semblance of a ground game against the Vikings. And if they can do that, then I think they can kind of remain balanced. And that's the key for them against this great Vikings defense. They can't become, you know, one-dimensional, third and eight, third and seven, or that's going to be a recipe for disaster. And I could see it really got kind of going one-sided.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the confidence people have in Drew Brees going into this matchup. And I guess I was curious, has there been any talk about kind of what this playoff run would mean for the legacies of Drew Brees and Sean Payton? Because one of the common things that's been kicked around Vikings land in the last little while is that, you know, Drew Brees' record in the playoffs isn't all that great. And I was just curious if that's a topic of conversation down your way.
Well, I think it definitely is. We talked to Brees yesterday about it, and he, of course, you know, dismissed any kind of legacy talk. He's kind of one of those, you know, psychotic robot guys that wants to focus on the task at hand. But we know that he knows how important this is, and that he's 17 years in the league now. You only get so many of these opportunities to play in these important level games. And so I'm sure he's spending ultra extra time studying, preparing for the Vikings, and maniacally preparing the way he does, because he knows that he's only got one Super Bowl on his resume. He's still somewhat, I think, underrated for covering a guy. You know, I've covered this guy now all 12 years here, and I know he gets his due nationally, but I still think he's given a little short shrift when it comes to just how great a player he is when you compare to Brady and Manning and Roethlisberger and that like. I mean, he's always kind of just on the outside of those guys. His name's thrown in, but I think it's going to take another Super Bowl, at least appearance, maybe another victory, for him to be considered on that echelon. There's no doubt he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, next year he's going to pass Peyton Manning for the career passing leader in the history of the NFL. So we know he's going to go in first ballot. But I think for his legacy and for Sean Payton's legacy, you know, they put up all these crazy numbers. I'm sure you all have seen it. I mean, they finished in the top six in total offense all 12 years that they've been here together. They finished first in total offense six different times and second another three times. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a run out of an offense in the history of the NFL like this tandem that they've done in New Orleans. But the big but is they've never won enough titles. And I think they see this as the start, at least, of another window where they might be able to get another Super Bowl or maybe two.
That's awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff. Hey, it's Miles here. I'll jump in and kind of thank you again for coming on. But kind of, you know, after all the review and everything you've done, you know, obviously covering the Saints as heavily as you do, and then kind of diving into the Vikings, could you give us a bold prediction of your, like, maybe, you know, your bold prediction for this game this week?
Well, you know what, guys? I mean, I actually flipped on this prediction. I was full bore picking the Vikings all the way after kickoff of the Saints game against Carolina. I thought the Saints would win, and I picked them in my crystal ball column. I do a crystal ball column January 1 every year, and I picked the Vikings to win in that column where I picked the whole year. But I flipped this week. Call me a flip-flopper. I picked the Saints to win a close game. And the reason it's a gut feeling. Logic tells me the Vikings are the better team. I think if you're thinking with your head, the Vikings will win in that environment with everything at stake. The Vikings have laid in wait for this game. But I just feel like there could be an intangible factor there. Maybe it's from having too many dinners with my friend Brett. He's telling me all the anxiety that Vikings fans go through. And it reminds me a little bit of the 2009 NFC Championship game in New Orleans when, and you all know this, I mean, the Vikings completely outplayed the Saints in that game, dominated all the statistical categories except for the big one, turnovers. if they don't cough the ball up as many times as they did, they don't throw that late pick, shoot themselves in the foot with the substitution error there, they win that game and probably go on and win the Super Bowl. And I feel like that game, the Saints played really tight. There was a lot of pressure on them at home to get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl. They'd never been there. And there was a lot of anxiety in the crowd. You can almost feel it on the playing field. And I feel like that could happen to the Vikings in this game if, say, they get down early. You know, if all of a sudden the Saints come out, hit a big play, you know, who knows, guy falls down, they get a turnover or something, and all of a sudden they're up 7-10 nothing. I think it could be a tough situation for Minnesota because of the history, because of the pressure to get to the Super Bowl this year in Minnesota, because Case Keenum's never been in this type of game before. Then I think that could play into the Saints' advantage, and that might be a lot of ifs there strung together, but I just got a feeling like somehow they might be able to pull this game out. But let's face it, the Vikings are favored for a reason, and the Saints got a lot of injured guys right now. So man-to-man, the Vikings have the better team, but my gut tells me the Saints got a great kind of puncher's chance to win this one.
I mean, to be honest, I hope it doesn't go that way. But
yeah, no,
I can totally understand why you have that feeling, though, because I think that's kind of why Vikings fans have so much anxiety about this game, is because that feeling right there of, you know, being tight, you know, coming out slow, all that expectation of being at home and, you know, having the elite level defense that we have, it definitely puts a lot of pressure on everybody.
Jeff just gave me anxiety talking about
right,
all of
that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, I totally get it. Like, I get why, like, because for all week, you know, we've just been thinking, we got this, stay confident. We had a week off, so we're recovering. But, you know, there's all that you just mentioned too, Jeff. So I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, look, I'll say this, guys. I mean, look, I'm the farthest you can get from a homer. I mean, if you go on Saints Twitter, I think you'll find out that, like, there are a lot of people that despise me down here that follow the Saints. You know, it's kind of like that in social media, right? They think I turned on them during Bounty because I was very critical of the team during Bounty Gate, and rightfully so. They deserved everything they got during the Bounty Gate scandal, the way they handled the entire investigation. That said, I will tell you, this is a very mentally tough team. They're battle-tested. I mean, they played in Minnesota. They played at Lambeau Field. They played, obviously, in the NFC South against Carolina and Atlanta. They played the Patriots this year. They went to the Rams and played. I mean, this team isn't going to come in there and really be intimidated by the environment, especially with Drew Brees at quarterback and that steely kind of offensive line with, like, Max Unger and that group. I mean, they're a very mentally tough team, and I think that's what it'll take to win a game like this against a great Vikings team on the road. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but I guess what I'm saying is it gives you a little more confidence in making a pick like this, because I don't think they're going to come in there and get blown out. I really don't. I think it'll be a close game. I could see Kai Forbath kicking a game-winning field goal or the Vikings getting control and holding off the Saints. But I don't think it's going to be another game where the Vikings, like in that opener, where they kind of had control and they were just keeping the Saints at bay at the end. I think it's going to be a nip-and-tuck affair.
Hey, Jeff, it's Yinka. So just for our listeners and whatnot, are there any projects that you think are coming up for you that you're going to be writing about, maybe leading up to the game?
Well, we're doing, you know, I've written a lot of columns that are in the tank right now that'll, you know, publish on NOLA.com. I'm putting together a thing, actually, you know, kind of historical look at these two franchises and some of the things we've talked about tonight, the Bounty scandal, the 2009 game, the fact that my first year on the beat was in 2000, and you all will remember that. I mean, the Saints went up there and got trucked by Dante Culpepper, Randy Moss, Jay Greed, and that group. The Vikings ended the Saints' first playoff game ever. The Vikings came down to the Superdome and just destroyed the Saints. I think it was in 1988. So I'm putting together a fun look at this history, because let's face it, the Vikings' biggest rivals, the Packers, NFC North rivals, the Saints' biggest rivals, the Falcons. But I think there is a little bit of a budding rivalry between these two franchises. And the way these two rosters are stacked, looking at it, I think they're going to be knocking heads for the next 2 or 3 years in the playoffs, because I don't think either one of them is going away anytime soon. So that'll be something to look at. I think Vikings fans will have have a good time looking at some of the history between these two franchises and why there might be a little bit of a budding rivalry here.
Well, that's awesome. We'll definitely be on the lookout for that. I guess anybody have anything else for Jeff before we let him get back to enjoying his evening? Oh, we'll take the silence as a no. Jeff, thanks again for coming on the Climbing the Pocket podcast with us tonight. And you have a good one, man.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on, man. I had a great time. I'm going to run out and buy a big winter coat and scarf and everything tomorrow.
Good luck. Thanks, man.
Okay, and that was really awesome. That was some great content that we just got there from Jeff Duncan. Make sure you check out his work on NOLA.com. Well, gentlemen, before I get you guys out of here to enjoying the rest of your evenings, obviously I need to get some bold predictions and some score predictions from you. So, JR, starting with you, my man, what you got for me? Bold prediction, score prediction.
All right, so the Vikings haven't given up more than 19 points at home this season. Who was the team to score 19 points? The Saints in week one. A Mike Zimmer-led Vikings team is 31-4. In the history of the Vikings, he's been coaching. They're 31-4 at home. Or excuse me, period, when they score 21 points or more. So I'm going to go Vikings 24, Saints 13. Bold prediction. Bold prediction. I think the Vikings defense steps up in a big way. Bold prediction. I think they pick off Drew Brees twice. And I think Danielle Hunter has two sacks.
Yes. Love it. Love it. Love it. Miles, JR set the bar pretty high there. What you got for us? Bold prediction, score prediction.
Score prediction. I'm going 27-17 Vikings. I think this is just going to be another coming out party for Case Keenum. I think he's going to throw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns.
Yinka wept.
I hope he wouldn't weep for that. I hope those are tears of joy. yeah, I guess that'd be kind of my bold prediction too. Just Case going for over 300 and three touchdowns and, winning a big game at home in the playoffs.
Yep. Love it. Love it. Love it. Saxy.
Yeah, man.
What you got for us? Bold prediction, score prediction.
I think I talked a little bit about Jerick McKinnon because I've said it time and time again. I think he is the key to the Vikings really making noise in the playoffs. So I say that Jerick McKinnon has at least one 60-yard screen that he houses. And I think this is going to be a fairly close game.
Man, Miles started paying for his internet, and things went back the other way. Internet stopped working. There can be only one. Oh, there he is.
I'm back.
Okay, all right. What's going on? Yeah, you're moving around too much.
So Jerick McKinnon, 60-yard screen touchdown. I think it's a close one. I was feeling a little nervous in the beginning of the week. Still not quite settled, but I think I'm going to lean towards the Vikings to the tune of 21-20 Vikings.
Whoa, that's closer than I would like to hear. So, all right, I'll go with score prediction first. I'm gonna go with 28-24 Vikings, and I think this is the game in which the Vikings' number one wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, reclaims his throne on the biggest stage imaginable. I think Diggs is gonna go off in this game. Going to have around 150 yards receiving, two touchdowns in this game to remind everybody that volume stats aside, he is in fact the Vikings number one. And don't yell at me. If you have beef with that take, yell at Pro Football Focus or Football Outsiders. So, all right, that's where I'm at with it. Before we get out of here, I guess, JR, you got anything? I think I saw you tease a little something on the timeline that maybe you might have a little something coming for us at some point this week. What you got going on, man?
Got a mock draft coming out. Full first round mock draft. Gonna wait till Monday, though. I'm gonna release it first thing Monday morning.
Okay. All right, Billy Price. Miles, how about you, man? What's going on?
Yeah,
what you got working for us, man?
That wide receiver DB conversation we had earlier that I kind of vomited out of my mouth. I'm going to try to vomit that onto some paper and put that out there tomorrow before before I head out of town for the weekend.
Oh, boy. Oh, out of town.
Boys weekend.
Where are you watching the game, though, Miles?
Come on, I'm going home.
Oh, okay. All right. I was worried there, you know, because there's traditions in here where, like, you watch the game at home in the basement by yourself. So the boys weekend thing, you know, I was nervous. Right.
That got cut short.
Okay, good, good, good.
Don't
good,
tell good. Them.
And Saxy Prince, man, what's going on with you? What you got in the hopper for us? Hopefully things that make people happy and put them in a wonderful mood ahead of this huge playoff matchup we got going on.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, it depends on what my research kind of brings up. I told you guys I've been trying to chart where Case is succeeding. And I'm just getting through week one. So we'll see how it continues to go. Obviously, I'm just getting through week one so I can, you know, see Bradford and all that stuff. But obviously, once week two goes, really trying to dive into Case Keenum. So, yeah.
Good stuff, good stuff, good stuff. And to our listeners, if you haven't had a chance to already, Alex and Flip both dropped some awesome articles on climbingthepocket.com. So make sure you go check those out. I'll link to them in the show notes. And I guess the last thing to touch on today is we've received a cease and desist notice from the attorneys of one Arif Hassan. So I need to have a retraction. A little while ago there, I said that Arif Hassan was Yinka's best friend in the whole world. And Arif's attorneys have asked us to immediately retract that statement as it is false and disparaging to their
fake
client.
So,
Arif, I apologize. Please tell your people to stand down. Yinka, I'm sorry. You will have to find a new best friend.
Or any friends, really. But yeah, okay. Let's end
this pod. All right. Yeah, let's wrap this thing up. Y'all, my name is Jason Brown. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast here with J.R. Miles and the Saxy Prince. Awesome guest, Jeff Duncan. Y'all have a wonderful evening, and we will talk to you soon on Victory Monday.